Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Normally, this would be back to school time, and the toughest decisions would be about wardrobe or school supplies, but these are not normal times. We're in a pandemic, and the decisions are, should I send my child to in-person instruction on campus where there is a probability of exposure to the virus, or should we stay home where there are questions about the rigor of instruction? What are local school districts doing, and what is their calculus as they make plans and propositions and try to work with teachers and students and their parents about providing an education that these kids need? Have a question or comment? We're joined by Brian Woods, PhD, superintendent for Northside Independent School District. If you have a question or comment for him, the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Superintendent Woods, welcome back to The Source.
Thanks, sir. Good to be back with you.
What's happening? What are you guys doing?
Yeah. Oh, you know, not much is going on at all. It's been an incredible time for sure. And as we've been doing since April, we're trying to plan for high quality and rigor regardless of the setting, right? We know that at least initially students are going to be all in virtual learning, and we are hopeful if the public health situation improves that we'll be able to slowly start to bring students back into buildings subsequent to that period of time. So, but obviously nobody knows when that might happen just yet.
So as I understand it, for Northside, virtual learning begins again for the new academic year on August 24th. And on Labor Day, or the day after, I'm not sure, that's when in-person instruction begins. Is that right?
Well, it's more complicated than that. What we've said is that the first 2 weeks between the 24th and that Labor Day weekend will be 100% virtual. What we're in the process of doing is finalizing a matrix and looking at what MetroHealth put out last week, and letting public health metrics determine when we do in-person learning and how much of it we do. And so while we won't have any in-person learning until at least Labor Day weekend, we know that that could be extended. Or if the public health situation improves, we could start to very slowly bring some students back as early as that Tuesday after Labor Day.
Other school districts like SAISD, they're beginning their virtual instruction on a week earlier, August 16th. So everyone needs to check in with their local school districts. So there's this big statistic that sticks out on nationally that 21% of kids are missing from checking in with their local school districts. I don't know what it's like at your school district, but that's pretty startling.
Yeah, that is a startling number. I've seen the same number. We fortunately did not have a number anything near that high, but we do have a number, and I'm not aware of a school district that doesn't have a number that, for whatever reason, either because of the public health environment or because of the economic situation that exists for many families, that they just did not reliably check in on virtual learning in the spring. And we know that we've got to get those families re-engaged, and we're in the process now of kind of finalizing our campus by campus re-engagement plans to go after those families and literally knock on doors if that's what it takes to get kids re-engaged.
So do you know your number? What's your percentage of missing students?
Yeah, it was about 7% in the spring.
And so the concern is if we never get back to on-campus learning, if we always depend on virtual learning, those 7 to 21% nationally, those kids could be just basically not get an education.
And that is just completely unacceptable. So that's not an option. We cannot let that be an acceptable option. And so that's, you know, and I'll tell you, based on the school people that I talk with all over the country, we know we need to get students back into buildings. We also know that we've got to do it in a way that's safe and not be in too big a hurry, because we've seen where decisions were made in the pandemic where folks moved too quickly and then ended up having to roll back. And so the goal is to restart in-person instruction as soon as it is possible, because we know it's just the very best setting for a lot of our students.
What are parents contacting their principals and your office about right now? What are their questions?
There are a lot of questions about what is it going to look like when we do come back in person. What is this campus going to look like? What's a classroom setup going to look like? All of those things. And we think we're going to be, long before we would start in-person instruction, able to answer those questions at a pretty granular level. Like, this is a picture or an overhead sketch of a classroom. This is exactly what it would look like. And, of course, what it would look like would be different based on the age of the school or the grade level of the students being taught, or, you know, all kinds of variables. But we think we're going to be able to be ready to answer that question long before it's absolutely needed, because parents have some say in sending their students back.
So we went through this a little bit in the tail end of the spring, right?
Yeah, we did. And so to some degree, it looks like that. I think I can very confidently say that that virtual learning and in-person learning will look very different than it did the last time people experienced it, whether that was virtual learning in May or in-person learning going back to the first week in March. It's going to all look very different than it used to, and I think for obvious reasons, right? In-person learning is going to be much smaller numbers of people in the building, even when we get to a very healthy public health environment, much smaller numbers of people in the building, spread out, face coverings required. Virtual learning will be much more rigorous and much more synchronous, much more real time than it was in the spring. And so I think folks are going to be in for some changes, but I think in most cases, necessary and needed changes.
Our phone lines are open. If you got a question for Brian Woods, Northside ISD Superintendent, the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. David is on the line. David, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. So my question is this. So my understanding is that the teachers are going to be teaching from their classrooms, even from the beginning. And so their children are going to actually come into the schools right away, and are going to be taught by the after-school program, by the Learning Sheet program. My question is, what is Northside going to do if COVID affects this large pod of teachers and their children? So how will you respond if suddenly dozens of teachers have to go into quarantine because one of those family members gets sick? And also, is this solution does it align with MetroHealth's guidance and been approved by the county? Thank you.
All right, David, thank you for that. And just to point out that this is not speculative, a question. This is what's happening in Georgia now. They reopened, and already they're having to close schools. Kids are testing positive for COVID now, and it is not working out well. And so your reaction to David's question, Dr.
Yeah,
Woods.
I think it's a reasonable question. I'm not sure that I would compare the situation that I've seen in Georgia to what we're talking about. I think we've all seen that viral picture of a very crowded hallway with nobody having any personal protective equipment. That is not at all what we contemplate, even before students are back in the building. What his question alludes to is, we've asked teachers if either they themselves or a member of their household is not in a medical situation that makes it inappropriate to come to the building, that they would come to the building and teach essentially by themselves in their classroom. And if they have school-aged children, that we would provide supervision for those students so that they could do distance learning and so their parent can concentrate on teaching with a high level of quality and rigor. We believe that the in-building environment is better from a teaching and learning standpoint because you've got access to supplies and materials that you might not at home, and in many cases you couldn't possibly at home. You've got reliable internet. You have access to your colleagues, which is really important in the teaching profession, even if it's socially distant access. That's very important. So that's the answer to his question.
I have an email question from Colleen. She's a teacher. She's a parent of a third, sixth, and eighth grader in NISD. Will NISD be following the recommendations of the local health directive released last week and keep the entire district at distance learning while we're in a red zone?
So the answer to the question is a little bit more complex than that. We are trying hard to follow the guidance of MetroHealth. We're also looking at whether or not it needs to be tweaked to our individual context. But the answer to the core of the question, which is if we're in a red zone, will we be doing all virtual learning? The answer is yes.
When the synchronous learning is something we're hearing a lot about, and does that mean basically there's going to be a webcam in back of the classroom and people and the kids at home are going to watch the class?
Well, I want to be clear that we don't see distance learning as 100% synchronous because it's hard to contemplate, especially a young student sitting for 6 or 7 hours a day watching lessons be taught. The way we see it is a student checking in regularly and having direct instruction from the teacher, which requires synchronous capabilities, and then going and working on their own as they would in a normal classroom setting. And then during that time, the teacher could pull small groups of students, could pull an individual student who has particular or needs enrichment, right, needs to be pushed a little further during that asynchronous time. And so if we're taking a third grader, for instance, I would check in for my reading direct instruction. I would check in for mathematics direct instruction, science and social studies, and so forth, but still have asynchronous time during the day. And then the teacher would have to obviously make the call, as they would in any environment, about when to pull me in for a little bit more one-on-one time.
God, it sounds like a lot of work for those teachers. We're going to talk more about how they're going to be dealing with all this when we come back from the break. We've got Brian Woods with us. He's the superintendent for Northside ISD. If you have a question or a comment, the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. Listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the reopening of our schools. We're joined by Brian Woods, PhD, Superintendent for Northside Independent School District, and we welcome your questions and calls. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, and Cece joins us. Cece, welcome to The Source. You're on the air with Brian Woods.
Hi. My question is for the special education students who have severe developmental delays that impact their ability to engage virtually. And so they may not be able to sit for 10 minutes virtually on a Zoom or what is the plan for those? That population of children.
Cece, thank you for the call. Brian Woods, what's up? What's the plan for special education students?
Yeah, so the plan for special education students is just like anything else with special education, and that is that it has to be created and individualized for the student. The student that was described in the caller's description is virtual learning is very challenging for that student and for the teacher who's trying to provide instruction. And so while we will do our dead best to provide that instruction in whatever way the student can tolerate it, even if it's 10 minutes at a time, that is the group of students that we would contemplate if their parents were willing and ready to bring to our buildings perhaps the earliest, because the in-person environment is so much better suited to their needs.
Now, you have a deadline that you want parents to let you know how they're going to engage with the ISD?
We did put out a questionnaire of parents that says if we were going back essentially, you know, tomorrow, what would be your preference? Would you prefer online or would you prefer in person? And then there's a series of sub-questions. For instance, if I say I prefer in person, we ask, do you need transportation so that we can make those plans? If your preference indicator is virtual learning, we ask, do you need a device? Do we need to support you with devices? So what we're trying to do is stand up our planning so that when we are able to go back to in-person learning, even in only in small numbers, we'll be ready to logistically do that, right? We'll have the right staff in place. We'll have transportation set up. We'll be prepared to serve the right meals to in-person students. There's a lot of logistics behind doing school that can't be stood up in a weekend.
So this deadline is not a hard deadline. I'm hearing all sorts of different things. It's really hard to lock in on what's going on. And from the TEA, we've heard that once you pick a mode of learning, whether you're going to be on campus or at home, that you're kind of stuck with that for the grading period. But you're saying that's not...
That's half true. So let me try to parse it out. So what we said to our families, and this is specific to Northside School District, was we ask that you tell us your preferences by the 10th. Then we heard from some families that said, I need some more information. I'm not quite ready. So we extended that deadline to, I believe, the 16th for folks to tell us what they would prefer. The state guidance, which you're absolutely right, has swiveled back and forth many times, is that if families choose virtual learning as their option, then the school district is allowed to say, we need you to stay in virtual learning until the end of the grading period. And that's for lots of reasons, one of which is you wouldn't be changing teachers in the middle of a grading period, which is really not educationally the best situation. We try to avoid that. And so that's the rationale. If, on the other hand, the family chooses in person, they can go out to virtual at any time. That's the family's choice. And again, this is a state guidance question, not specific to Northside. And we would then ask them to stay in distance or virtual learning until the end of the grading period.
Well, the state has told us a lot of things. And one of them is if you don't go back to school, then they're not going to fund school districts. Is that something that's still being talked about?
Yeah, I think at least from a politics standpoint, I've seen some walking that back lately after I and others across the state expressed our pretty sincere disbelief at that position. I've seen some of that kind of walked back. There's now, I hear in the governor's public remarks, talk of the possibility of a waiver, that if a school district felt like they weren't ready to just open the doors to all comers by that eighth week of school, that you could contemplate a waiver. There's nothing out that's specific to that. It's just talk, but that's what I hear most recently.
That's all we got to work with, you know, what the talking point of the day is.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's all we've got to work with. And so that makes planning fairly precarious.
Let's go to a caller, Kamala. Kamala, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I wonder if you've considered supporting learning coaches for the students. I was a learning coach for a student in an online school, and I think it's the way they often do it. It's someone, a parent or someone else that works with the students, and particularly for elementary students, it's a way to take some of the pressure off of the teachers and yet get a good educational experience going. And if we could, you know, give some support for people who would be willing to do that for the students that need to be at home, I think it's a good idea.
All right, Kamala, welcome. Thank you for that. And Brian Woods?
Yeah, it's a very thoughtful question. We have had contact with some groups of parents who want to do that for their children. They want to look to bring in a person perhaps with an education background or perhaps not, and then have them taught by a teacher, a Northside teacher, but in essence supervised by a learning coach, or there's all kinds of phrases for it. And we will certainly support that if that's the mode that families want to be in. We actually are kind of excited about exploring that, actually.
So there are kids who have parents who are very engaged and they continued their learning during these months. And then there are probably some kids who are about the same when this whole thing started. And then there's some kids that they went off I've heard it called the COVID cliff, where there's been a lot of slippage in their academic skills. So is there going to be some sort of assessment to figure out, you know, who's really where and what lane they should be in education?
Yes, there's going to be assessment once we, and some of that can be done virtually, frankly, and some of it just can't. But But there are going to be assessments along core skills. Think about numeracy and literacy. But the other piece of data that we have is we know who was engaged in the spring, right? That's not an unknown. We know who that was. We know what their readiness level was before that happened. And then if they were not engaged, we know that there's going to be substantial work that needs to be done with those children in order to get them back up to speed and back on grade level, if you will. So that is a known quantity. That's not a mystery.
Teachers, are they ready to go back to the classroom? Do they have a choice? And how are they going to be doing all of these things, teaching the in-person and also online and all these other assessments that we talked about?
Yeah, I think the role of a teacher was never one for the faint of heart. It is some of the hardest work in our society, and I think perhaps now more than before March, folks have an appreciation for how hard that work is, and I would be absolutely lying to you if I didn't tell you it was going to be very challenging. I think in order to do this well is going to be quite challenging. We're trying to stand up everything we can to support our teachers with regard to a more robust learning management system, with regard to more planning time during the day, so that they can make these various modes of teaching work. But yeah, if I were to say that, there's almost no way to underplay overplay that comment. It is going to be challenging. We know we've got people who are up to the task, and we know that groups of teachers are going to have to work together to kind of spread the load and shoulder the burden. But it is going to be very challenging work.
Are you going to have to bring on more teachers? You're going to have to get more people to do all this extra work?
Yeah, I would love to be able to say I had a budget to do that. But, you know, what is a public health crisis is also an economic crisis, and schools are hardly exempt from that. We're spending dollars that we obviously had not budgeted before on things like technology and PPE and so forth, and anticipate a loss of revenue to compound that.
Some teachers are really good at online engagement, and others are, you know, really, they're not good. And how are you going to do some sort of like, well, let's make you the online person, and you say, are you going to do that?
Yeah, I think there's some possibility that can happen at some grade spans, but there are so many teachers who are the only one who teach a certain thing. Think about the forensic science teacher at high school. Think about the ninth grade basketball coach. Think about the dual language teacher at his second grade. Those folks they're the only one at that grade level, or perhaps even at that school, that does what they do. They're certified to do it. And so in many, many cases, teachers will be working with both in-person and virtual learners.
Okay, so let's bottom line this. We got a minute left. So virtual learning beginning August 24th. And right now, the fuzzy date for going back to campus is around Labor Day?
That's true for Northside. And any whatever happens after Labor Day will be guided by public health metrics.
All right. Brian Woods, thank you so much. Northside ISD superintendent. I know that SAISD, they're supposed to be getting their virtual learning on August 16th. People need to check in with their school district to find out what's expected of them, because this is going to be tough, but it's important. We got to get these children. They got to get their learning on. And thank you so much for joining us, Superintendent Woods.
You bet.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Ruben Garcia and Kathleen Creedon. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.